So we thought, wouldn't it be cool if there was an app, which we had all the data anyway. We knew who was cutting and we knew how many people were queuing. So we thought, how about we have an app where our customers could log on and they just see who's cutting and what the last recorded queue time was.
I always wanted barbering to be something people chose to do. People seem to fall into barbering if they weren't very good hairdressers. And that used to piss me off. I used to love my barbering. I used to, you know, I still do. It was full of what I considered to be rejects from other industries that would be insulting. I'm like, I used to go around girlfriends' houses and say I'm a barber, and the dad would be like, oh, right. And I'd show them a picture of the shop and they'd be like, oh, that's quite nice, actually. And I'm like, well, what the fuck did you think it was going to look like?
So many guys have built followings of 50,000, 100,000, 200,000. And, you know, good on them, because they've been doing it for years, posting to their socials, getting nothing in return. So really, they're doing it for their followers, and the followers are enjoying it. It's what's so good about the barber community is you've got these people who have got these amazing followings. And they're not making any money, out of it.
You get some followers and you get some likes, and that's the thing that you end up chasing rather than the customer side of it, you know. And I think, you know, we were able to grow the business without that. And it humbles you, you know, because it stays about the customer.
Welcome to The Noble Barber. This is a podcast for barbers by barbers, cutting through the crap of the industry. We all want to know how our businesses can run better. I want to talk to people who've done it, messed it up and got it right second time round, and can tell us the way that you and I can make our businesses better.
Hi, welcome to another episode of The Noble Barber. I'm here today now chatting with, well, brothers, Martin and Oliver. And, well, I guess we're talking franchise as a primary, but you've also got Buzz, which is the app that obviously we'll cover later.
Yep, we'll try and cover it all.
I always think brothers, the thought of me working with my brother sounds like a recipe for disaster. How did you two come to
easy?
Have a, what, a 30-year career together?
We're so much different, right? I think that's probably the first thing. I think if you're too similar, it's going to be difficult. So we've been different in everything that we do. He's more aggressive in his approach to everything, doesn't think about what he's going to do and dives in. And I've always been a little bit more settled and calculated about things, I suppose. Okay. So he was, you know, tattoos and I, you know, I'm not. So I think it just worked. We've always, you know, we got our first house together. You know, our parents brought us up to be close. So, yeah, it was an easy one, actually.
And we know each other so well. So when we feel like we're treading on each other's toes, you're able to manoeuvre around it without the clash because, you know, it's cheesy, but we've been best mates forever.
No, that's fantastic.
And we've navigated through so much stuff in our life that by the time we came to doing business together, we just moved around it. And we're like, okay, it doesn't like that. You can usually tell from the energy, like, all right, well, that's not working.
Mm. Yeah.
And you either push it because you feel like it, and then you know it's important to the other person. And when you care about them, you're like, all right, well, you can go with it then because you care about it more than I do. And then another bit, he'll be like, oh, you care about it more than I do. And
a lot of people say, how do you work with him? And I'm like, well, I'm probably the only one that knows him enough to be able to...
Mm. So you started Headcase in 99?
2000,
sorry.
December 2000.
I told you my research isn't brilliant.
Yeah.
I'm offended, sir.
And that was just you. You were off doing something else at that time, were you?
I was at university,
Okay.
Yeah.
And where was first Headcase?
Godalming. And he was really not enjoying university, so he would come back from uni and just come and hang out in the shop. So while he was there, I was like, why don't you just learn? Yeah, I'll buy some head blocks.
In a kitchen.
Yeah. You taught him?
Yeah.
Excellent.
And, you know,
and that's a test of a relationship.
Yeah.
And then one day it was like he'd been doing it for ages. You know, I knew the customers really well. They all knew him by now because he'd been in there for months. And then it was...
I still remember it. We were at a petrol station. He said, on Monday, you're going to start charging. I was like, can I say?
Yeah, of course you can.
Right. I was like, fuck.
And that's the best way.
At some point.
I'm going in. Yeah. All right. Yeah.
That's how you get going.
Yeah. How did you? So you both worked together in the same store for a bit. You both worked
forever.
In Godalming.
We've never not been barbers.
You know, we launched before we franchised it. We grew to three, and in every one, the team worked. We bring in other people to work in that store. Then we would go to the new one, and then the new one. Ooh. And the first three was Godalming, Hazelmere, and Farnham. Mm.
That was the start of the brand. You know, we had like paint left over. We had floor left over. We just had a chair that we weren't using because, you know, we opened a shop thinking this one will have four or five barbers, and then it had two.
Yep.
Like what normally happens. So you had a spare chair. The name worked well, you know, Headcase. So we just ended up one to the next. Yeah.
That's exactly the reason I really wanted you guys to come on. And thank you. I've been chasing you down for a couple of months. Thanks for making it. You know, I spent a lot of time talking to lots and lots of barbers. And periodically, this, oh, I'd like to franchise, I want to franchise. And this is a conversation that does come up a lot. You know, guys who've got a really good, successful shop or two or three that are looking to do something else.
It's the best way.
How do you guys go from your three shops, quite a traditional chain that people, that are a lot out there?
Mm. Well, there wasn't then. There wasn't lots of chains.
Mm.
You know, back then, we're talking 2010. You know, there wasn't what barbering is. I always wanted barbering to be something people chose to do.
Yeah.
Like you choose to be a plumber or you choose to be a thing or, you know. People would seem to fall into barbering if they weren't very good hairdressers. And that used to piss me off. I used to love my barbering. I used to, you know, I still do.
Yeah.
And when it was full of what I considered to be, you know, rejects from other industries, that would be insulting. I'm like, I used to go around girlfriends' houses and say I'm a barber and the dad would be like, oh, right. And I'd show them a picture of the shop and they'd be like, oh, that's quite nice, actually. And I'm like, well, what the fuck did you think it was going to look like? You know, like, come on. And that was when I was like, I want it to be taken seriously.
Mm.
So that's when I really got into the business side of it. And I've always been fascinated with America and the franchising thing and McDonald's. You know, everyone thinks it's, you know, packaged together into this cold thing. And it's like, well, yeah, that if that's what your thing is, then that's what it is. Or you can have your company and you can change it however you want. And we had a brand that you could have your one. All right, it needed to have red on the wall and the big mirrors and a few things. But ultimately, I wanted people to come into your shop and know they're in your shop.
You didn't get a manual.
Yeah, like you have to have the operations manual.
You have an operations
manual. But you can make that however you want. You know, it's not a fixed document. It's you make it up. So how does your shop work? And there we go. You start building you a thing.
Yeah.
And I wanted people to come into your shop and know they're in your version of Headcase. As long as they recognize the name, that was great. And that's now when we speak to people, we've got a franchise development company called Power Up that we've just been going for a year now. And we speak to barbers about it as well. And, you know, people need their head brought round to franchising. They think they're going to ruin their brand and whatever. And it's like, well, that's the only real way to strengthen your brand. You know, no one's going to... Not many people are interested in buying one.
It's probably, you know, that's probably the most common thing that we hear.
Yeah.
When we say to someone, you've got this amazing thing, because franchising could be anything, right? You could pick shoes, you can franchise it. Because really it's just someone who knows what they're doing, educating someone that doesn't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
And they just help them along the way. So that's why you tend to have a higher success rate, because there's challenges that are almost inevitable when you start a business. And somebody that's done it before knows how to navigate those things, right? So franchising is kind of like, this is how you do it. We'll help you with that, but you're going to run it. It's your business. Mm. We'll just make sure you don't fall down where the majority of people fall down. That's a brilliant model, but most people that we speak to will say, I don't want to ruin my brand. I'm too protective over my brand. And I respect that, right? Everyone's got their brand. Brands have become like a personal thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, the person can be the brand now, and I don't know how long that's been going, but it makes sense. Mm. Anything can be a brand. And what our challenge is saying to people, franchising doesn't ruin your brand. It strengthens it because you understand what your brand is. You protect it. You define it. My brand it's these five things, like McDonald's. You know, it's the yellow M. It's used to be Ronald McDonald. We were looking at it earlier.
Mm.
It's changed a lot, right? It can change over time, but you define what your things are. And then every time you open one, you make sure those things
are
there.
Those key implements are
synonymous,
in place.
Right, with your brand. Mm. So it actually strengthens it.
And you can get 50 of them.
Yeah.
As long as it's under your control, you get 50 of them. And then you've got something you can actually sell. And as you've got a legacy business, then. One or two barbershops is great, but they close.
Yeah.
You retire and they close.
Oh, yeah.
Or you get a load of shops and you sell it. And now you've got some money that you can live on for the rest of your life.
Yeah. And that's interesting because we were franchisees of our own business. We always wanted to be the barbers as well because there was nothing worse than people saying, yeah, what do you know? You're not barbers. And we would always say, we are barbers. Remember, we went over to Ireland. We franchised in Ireland, right? So we went to South Africa, the Netherlands, and we had a Headcase in Ireland. And the guys over there said, oh, the team here, they didn't want to listen to what we had to say. They weren't aggressive about it. But they didn't want to listen to what we wanted to say. And we took them out for a beer over lunch. And we just said something about us being barbers. And you saw the look on their face change. They were like, so you guys are barbers? And we were like, yeah. What do you think we were? And people thought we were American, that we were corporate. I don't know, we heard all sorts.
Yeah.
And as soon as they found out we were barbers, they just started listening
to us.
Walls
came down a bit.
Instantly they trusted us and they realised who we were, you know. So
when you start, I mean, you know, back in 2002, something like that, when you did your first, 2003?
2000 was the first one. Second one was 2003, third one 2008.
And then, wow.
And then we franchised in 2012.
Was Tony and Guy franchising at that time? So those, it was existing.
Yep.
How did you start?
It wasn't inspired by those.
No.
It was, I always loved the idea of franchising.
Mm.
Because to me, in my business mind, it makes absolute sense for growth.
Yeah.
Then, you know, I initially wanted to open 50, but it took me 8 years to open 3. And I'm like, shit, if it takes me another 8 years to open another 3, that's a long time. And then that's only 6. And I'm running out of time, you know. So I was thinking, right, franchising makes sense. So we bought franchise partners in and took a couple of years to get the momentum going. And then before you know it, you know, you got 42 of them we had at the time.
42? Mm.
250 barbers.
Did you keep the original franchise partners all the way through?
Yep.
So overall, it's been a really, I mean, obviously it's been a good, it's a great career, but has it been a great, it's all been good relationships? And
yeah,
absolutely. I mean, you know, I've always heard people say that you shouldn't ever go into business partners with an equal number because you need to have the odd number to make decisions. Whereas if you're equal, you can have 50-50 and then it's who can win a fight. And thankfully, I had him
fifth,
on my side.
I'm the fifth person.
So we got what we wanted a lot of the time.
Excellent.
Which was probably a good way to be because we were the barbers. And that was fine.
Yeah.
The franchise side, the guys came in with a model which worked because there is a model that works. You need certain things in place. But once you understand that, really you can get creative about how you apply it to your business. And I think that's probably why it worked well for us, and others have tried since, and they've contacted us and said, how did you do that?
No.
Right? And that's when we came up with the Power Up idea.
And
people were asking how we do it, and we're like, fucking, we should...
You've got to know the industry to know how you make certain things.
I was going to say, that's it. You had that kind of great combination of one, there's a lot of barbers out there who know how to be barbers. There's lots of us that know how to be barbers and know how to open a shop.
Yes.
But that next move of opening up chains and doing it to franchise or whichever way you're going to go.
Yeah. Not losing,
that's
not
where
diluting.
You lose so many people. I mean, how many chains have grown to 8, 9 and then disappeared?
Yeah.
But not even got that far.
Yeah.
I know. Yeah. I mean, for us, like, it's frustrating because, you know, we were saying, like, we obviously just had a chat and we turned up and we were saying it's nice to have done some things different and to have been the end of the journey. So you can now genuinely try and help the younger guys. Because they're the next guys. I think it's why Headcase worked, was because we weren't precious about it. We were really happy to give a lot of the decisions over to the younger guys because at some point, they're more relevant in a way. And it's okay to step back and say, look, we can make some of the decisions at the top that are best for the long-term sort of, you know, the long-term business. But the day-to-day stuff, let's listen to what the team are saying because they're the young guys, right? Yeah. They know what they're talking about.
And you can try loads of stuff. If you know, try it in your shop, see what it looks like. Try it in your shop, see what it looks like. We won't do it with the rest of them. And then we'll get the feedback. And then if it works, everyone, this worked. And you can make massive amounts of ground with a network of shops. Yeah. You try and make a change in, you said you've got 3, right? You know, you try and make a change in yours. You have to give a period of time, usually, 4 or 5 weeks before you see a second person come back. So it takes you 6 to 8 months to know whether a concept has worked or not, right? If you've got a chain of 40 shops, you can bang out 4 or 5 different concepts. And in that time, you know what works, what doesn't work. And we've got 10 different models that we have feedback on, all the while you've done one.
Yeah, of course.
So our chain can grow like
But what rapidly. what we saw, and this is what we try and say to a lot of, we've got a lot of really good friends still in the barbering world. And they've got these amazing brands. And we've been to the end of it.
Mm.
And what we saw was, if you're a barbershop owner, it can be a really good experience and it's a huge achievement and it's great because not everyone can do it. So I've got a huge amount of time for anybody that tries it. But when you get to the end of it, there's a very small market that can buy it off of you.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't think about the end of, you know, where you're going. Cause it's a lot of fun. It's the best place in the world. I'm not in the barbering world anymore on a daily basis. I'm corporate now and in franchising. So I've got more franchise knowledge than ever.
Sure.
But it's, the barbering days are the best days. Mm. Everyone always says it, do you miss it? And it's like, God, do I miss it? Like, we had so much fun in the barbershop. But What a lot of people don't realize is you get to the end of that at some point and you try and sell a barbershop, and you know, our shop making a lot of money and it should have been worth £250,000 based on sales that I see now. But the people that I'm selling to are barbers.
Yeah.
They don't have £250,000. And the guys that do, they don't give a shit about a barbershop. They want to invest in housing or stocks or whatever.
So you haven't got a buyer.
You sell your shop for 30 or 40K. Mm.
And then they consider whether or not they want their own shop for that amount of money. Can I do it cheaper?
Right.
And then you've got nothing at the end of it.
So it's there's no real end game to owning a barbershop. It's enjoying the journey as opposed to the end. And if you get 20 or 30K at the end, like, amazing. Brilliant. But if you were to create a chain of shops and you become the owner of that group of shops, in particular franchising. Mm. So we had 40 plus shops. What we became was a franchise model. And now the people that were interested in buying it were people who had franchises. So all of a sudden we were talking about sums of money, which we would never have been able to get with one or two shops. Even if those one or two shops were probably justifying the same value, there was just no market to sell
there's no buyer. Yeah.
So to be able to create a business, you can then sell to somebody who knows how to run a business. And it doesn't matter what the business is. Mm. It can be gardening, it can be barbering. It's the same deal. And you can get some value out of it. And all that hard work is worth it, you know. Mm. So
I mean, you've got 20-odd years of franchise experience in barber franchising-ish. Mm. Has it changed, grown? Is it your original idea compared to now, as you're advising people and working with people? Because it's such a huge amount of experience right at the sharp end, right at the beginning of it all.
Yeah, I think franchising, when I first did it, was more structured in the cookie cutter model. That's what everybody understood to be. I think now franchising is more common. For a while, we didn't like calling it a franchise. We were trying to think of another word, you know, a co-op or a thing, because you said franchising and everyone was like, oh, McDonald's. So, but there was a shift. I can't remember when it was, but suddenly franchising wasn't a word that people moved on. Franchising suddenly became a good thing.
Green light, yeah.
I was like, oh, you got a franchise. Mm. Oh, okay. And we then started leading with franchise. I did a whole thing on Barber Evo. I can't remember when it was now, 2018 or something. And one of my things was, I wrote franchising on my finger, and it was like the dirty word, in especially in the creative role.
Right.
Didn't do that. You know, that's completely corporate. We're not that, you know, and I was so glad to see the shift. And I think now it's becoming so commonplace that people are so comfortable with it, that I think there's a bit of a revolution in franchising, that it doesn't need to be a cookie cutter model anymore. It can be anything, actually. As long as it's, you know, this is where our concept of Power Up came from. I think you could even strip it down. You could have your version, call it whatever you wanted. You could have your version and call it whatever you wanted. As long as it was powered by a recognized thing.
Yeah.
You know, on the fascia, you could have, you know, whatever, powered by Power Up, for example, or whatever. I think that would still be recognized as a reliable franchise offering, because that is what people would see as what they're buying into, and the trust element, because that's what people want.
I think that's it. It's a really interesting word.
And then the customer wants the trust and the business wants the support. So if you could give the business the support and the customer the trust, you've got a franchise, because now you're buying into a collective model. And
it's,
I think you're going to see more
for barbering
of that.
Because a lot of barbers are so good at running a business, as running a barbershop.
Yeah.
They don't like the businessy side of it.
Yeah, of course.
You know, and there's a lot of the complications over there with contracts, and you say that stuff and you just see people like shrink down.
Yeah.
And then you flick some music on, put them in front of a crowd, and they become
the person that
they're meant to be, right? So it's, if you can have a team who can say, look, you do the thing that you do so well, which is what makes you you, let's just work out how to replicate it so that it doesn't get lost, so that it becomes stronger and more recognizable. And by the way, so that you can eventually monetize the following that you've built. So many guys have built followings of 50,000, 100,000, 200,000. They don't, and you know, good on them, because they've been doing it for years, posting to their socials, getting nothing in return. So really they're doing it for their followers, and the followers are enjoying it. It's what's so good about the barber community is you've got these people who have got these amazing followings, and they're not making any money out of it. And we often say to them, like, that's fine, because we've done a lot without making any money out of it. because it's the right thing to do. So there's nothing wrong with that. But it's like, before that following becomes irrelevant, do you not want to try and make something out of it and get something back? So why not, you know, create your own franchise offering? Yeah. Because if Headcase had had that, we would have been 10 times bigger than 40 because we didn't have Instagram. It was never about us when we did Headcase. It was,
which I think was vital because there was no ego attached to it. You know, you get some following and, you know, I think a lot of barbers these days, they forget that the people they're trying to post to aren't the people giving them any money. And they forget about the customer side of it. And it's all about, let me film this thing that I'm doing. Let me take a reel. And the customer can sit in the chair and feel, you know, like cattle. You know, it's like, I'm in here for a haircut, man. You know, and now I know
ring light and a camera out.
Right? Yeah. And you get some followers and you get some likes, and that's the thing that you end up chasing rather than the customer side of it, you know. And I think, you know, we were able to grow the business without that. Mm. And it humbles you, you know, because it stays about the customer, you know. Yeah. And I've never really got into the social media side of it. I never know really what to post and what to write. And I've always been crap at it. I never take pictures of my haircuts. You know, I feel bad
I'm
about
the only
doing
one
it.
I never remember to.
And
right. That looks great. Oh, thanks. Did you get a before?
And at the end, I'm chatting. Yeah. You know, they're getting up and we're just finishing the chat. And it's, hey, I see you, Matt. And then I'm like, oh, fuck, I didn't take a picture. You know, which I don't really care about. And that's ironic because now we've got Buzz, which is the social media thing. Yeah. You know, it's the app, you know. So, you know, I think it's a big part of it. But I've never been one for it. Mm-hmm. I think it's done me well. It's an easy trap to fall into. Is just
well,
chasing,
I think it can be exactly
that.
You just get lost in it, don't you? Yeah. I mean, interesting what you guys are saying about the business side, because when we started doing this, as well, we put Cutting Through the Crap, because we kind of went through, when as I started thinking about how this was going to run, we got inundated by the kind of business guru online, and that's the and they a lot of them do very well with very little. Mm. And there is such a demand from barbershop owners who are looking for the answers, who are looking for that support. Mm. I'd never actually, until sitting here now, put that together. That actually, that's exactly that franchise point marries up much better than spending thousands and thousands of pounds a month paying for a business consultant to come in here and,
it does,
and
right?
show I mean, you what to do.
Give you an example.
And they're not from the field.
No, exactly.
I mean, one of the examples that we had was, you know, we love the data side of things. You know, you get a real kick from it. It's either a thing or it's not, right? Yep. And we've always loved the data side of things. And to give you just an insight into the way we used to support the Headcase lot. So we had a system that we built, and it was a till system. It was like an EPOS system because we didn't want to spend money on the big system. So we developed something that was just for us. And it would tell us, the barbers would all log in so we'd know who's working. And it wasn't like an eyes on to make sure people were there on time. That wasn't the intention. It was because of we were trying to help their businesses, right? So we would know who was working. And then we had a queue counter. So every time somebody would put through a haircut, they would go to their till and they would put in, you know, skin fade or whatever, any product sold. And then before they could complete the transaction, they would have to say how many people are in the queue. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, up to 9. This is when it was our walk-ins.
Yeah, pre-COVID.
Walk-ins were the best. Yeah. Best barbering times, right? For everybody involved, absolutely. In my opinion, right? Anyway. So, of course, they would do that. And what we would get to see is, over a period of time, seasonally or monthly, whatever, how many barbers you had and how many people were in the queue. And we would often want to see, I think it was like 2.4 people in a queue was what we wanted to see. If you had a queue of 2.4, you were well-staffed. Because that meant, let's say there was one or two of you, there was never more than a haircut's worth of people. If you had a higher queue than that, it normally meant that you needed to take on more staff because the queues were getting too long.
Too long, yeah.
But if the queues were shorter than that, so you only had one, let's say you were probably overstaffed. And what we saw all the time was barbershop owners would hire lots of people because they had to be ready for the Saturdays. And then they would have 3-4 guys doing what the hell they wanted, taking cigarette breaks on their phones. But they wouldn't sack them. And then they would come to us and say, my business isn't working. And we would say, well, your biggest cost is your barbers. Your business can't keep working if you're going to be paying £2,000 a month to 5 barbers. I mean, that's a huge amount of money. So what we were trying to show was if you have to have some hard conversations at some point if you want your business to survive. Because at the end of the day, if your business fails, all your barbers are going to go off and get other jobs. They're going to be fine. So don't worry about your barbers. I mean, they're important. Relationships are important, but they're going to be fine. The person that's really going to lose out is you, because you're the one that's put a lot of money in, a lot of investment, a lot of time, and that will get destroyed. So the business side of things, that was a huge part of the support, was us showing, look, I know you think you're really busy, but let me show you, you're not.
Yeah, fascinating.
And these guys are just having conversations. And because they're just messing around, well, the queues are building up again, so you feel like you're busy. But it's because three of your guys are over there for 25 minutes. So it was about trying to make efficiency and accountability. And
We developed walkaway buttons. So if somebody would get up from the queue, this is one of the things that I was pushing a lot, and it's vital, and still it's not really looked at. When somebody got up from the queue, the barbers would push a button, and it would tell the system that somebody's walked away. If we saw somebody come up to the window and walk away, push the button. So we'd be able to look at, you know, three barbers, 12 haircuts each, eight people in the queue, eight walkaways today. Then we'd correlate the time and work out when the walkaways happened. And, you know, do you need another barber? Do you need to put your price up? You know, what's your business looking like? How many people are you losing every day? You feel successful, but look, you've had 30 people walk away today. You know, you need to put price up on Saturday.
And it was taking those sorts of decisions out of their hands, you know, with their support. But it was having to let someone go, because you had, you know, three guys can make a £20,000 shop, £20,000 a month, let's say. You don't need five, six guys. You can have an unbelievably good business with three barbers, and you've got four or five. So taking those decisions out, price increases, at the right time for the right reasons. It was those sorts of conversations that...
And presumably at the time, no one was doing anything like this.
No one.
The software wasn't out. I mean, now, click and, what was it, Track and Trace brought everyone over to appointment systems. So
Even with appointments,
we've got the data, but is anyone using it?
Well, no. Yeah. And I've spoken to every single booking system and said, can you let us know how many people can't book with me on Saturday? You know, I'm fully booked. I look busy. I've got three barbers working. It looks busy. But how many people tried to book today and couldn't? You know, barbers, they say, fully booked for the next month. And I'm like, that's great. But that's fucking dangerous, man.
That's very bad.
Because now you've got, you know, 3 weeks worth of customers that don't, they want, blokes want a haircut today or tomorrow, right? They don't want to wait 3 months. It's like, so it's great that you feel like you're successful because you're busy for 3 weeks, but you're losing people.
Losing a lot of people.
A lot of potential customers. And if a booking system would say, you lose 10 people a day are looking to book with you, maybe you'd bring in another barber.
Yeah.
And now your business is a bit busier. You're making a bit more money.
And it's one thing having the data, but it's knowing what to do with it.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? You're sitting there with report after report and no knowledge to do with it.
A lot of these big systems, I think they think they know what people want to see.
Hmm.
So they make it all, it's all there. Yeah. And the more that's there, it's harder to read. And as a result, people don't look at it.
Yeah.
Whereas we used to, you know, we were barbers, right? So we would know what they wanted to see and we would present it and talk them through it. And it's probably why it worked, and it's what we saw, you know, that, yeah, it was a good combination. It worked well, you know, so.
You guys still cutting hair?
I am.
You still cut a bit? You do?
I do on the side, yeah.
Can't help it every now and again.
That's right, yeah. I had my stuff this morning. He came around and I was like, I need a haircut. And yeah, it wasn't for this, I just need a haircut. So I have my cutting bag and, yeah.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. That's good stuff. So, you know, so, I mean, great journey, but that's onto new things now. Mm-hmm. So Buzz, as you just started to mention there, made quite a racket when we were all pottering around, clapping the NHS, stuck at home.
Yeah.
You know, where did Buzz come from? Where was that? Was that a collaboration of the two of you together again, or how did it start?
Yeah, just the chats start, don't they? And I think having the franchise, you get a top-down view on things. And when you've got that many shops, you've almost got a top-down view of the industry and the things that are needed. And then I don't even know how. The conversation just starts.
I know how it started, right? Because we loved the idea of an app, a headcase app, but we always wanted an app for a reason, not just an app to have an app.
For a bit of an app, yeah.
Because everyone's got an app, have an app, you know? And we were like, let's not do that. And the idea was, I don't know if you remember this, because we were walk-ins.
We were like, right, that's what you want in a business partner.
You see, I've got a brother, no memory.
They say he's my carer.
I make notes.
It's like it works.
You said it. I promise you said it. I made a note of it.
Jesus.
All right. So we thought, what do people want when they come to the barbershop? They look through the window and they want to see who's cutting hair and how many people are waiting. And they immediately decide whether they're going to come in or go. So if I get to a barbershop window, let's say, and I'm a customer, and my favorite guy's in there cutting hair, well, that's a big tick. If he's only by himself and there's five people waiting, you're like, fuck, pay for parking, I've come out on my lunch break. And it's that, you know, you see him like, sigh, you see it all the time. They're like, and they leave. Or if there's like one person waiting and I look in and there's three barbers, but my favorite guy isn't there, they pop in and they're like, oh, is Ollie in today? Mm. It's like, no, he's not. And they're like, oh, you know, he's coming back. And they leave and they're pissed off about it. So we thought, wouldn't it be cool if there was an app, which we had all the data anyway. We knew who was cutting and we knew how many people were queuing. So we thought, how about we have an app where our customers could log on and they just see who's cutting and what the last recorded queue time was. So from their homes, they could be like, I wonder if Martin's working today. Hmm. Go on. Right. Oh yeah, Martin's working with Ollie and Jack. And last recorded queue was 15 minutes ago. Amazing. So queue isn't too long. I'll shoot down and get a haircut. Yeah, perfect for a walk-in, right? And we were like, that is a great idea. So we were fleshing it out. And then a friend of ours came in and he's in tech. He was like, oh, you boys want to get into tech? And we were like, well, look, we've got a till system. And actually we've got this app idea. And we didn't just go spouting it around. And we were like, this is what we're thinking about. And he was like, oh, brilliant if you did that. The amount of times I come to the window and either the queue's too long or one of you guys aren't here, or you should do that. Why haven't you done it? And we said, well, we're thinking about doing it. This was just before COVID. So he said, we should go for a coffee because I'd love to work with you on it. And of course, sometimes you need that to go, okay, let's do it. So we went for a coffee. And he was like, right, so talk me through it. How would it work? And this was the birth of Buzz, right? We said, okay, well, a barbershop would create a profile. And then the barbers would create profiles. And the barbers would link themselves to the shops. So now, if you click on a shop, you can see the barbers that work in it. And whenever the barbers finish a haircut, they go onto the app and they just scroll how many people are in the queue. The customers can now create a profile. They can go and find one of the headcase shops, favorite it. So when they open the app, that one comes up first. And then because the barbers link through our system will know which barbers are working, it will highlight them ones and say, these ones are in today. And this was the last recorded queue. And he was like, interesting. Okay. So could the barber profiles message each other? And I was like, sure. Makes sense. And he was like, okay. And can the barbers post images, presumably? And I was like, yeah, I mean, they do that all the time. So chuck images in there too. And he was like, right, so you're making LinkedIn. And I went, well, no, I use LinkedIn, right? I was like, okay, sort of.
Really fucking annoying when someone's already come up with a brilliant idea that's first, been
done.
Isn't it?
I was like, what? Facebook's been done? What? So he went, you're making LinkedIn. And I went, well, it's kind of. It's like a professional platform. Mm. And he went, well, aren't barbers already doing it? And I said, no, there's no barbers on LinkedIn. And this was a revelation to him. He was like, so where are they? And I went, they're all on Instagram. And he said, yeah, okay, but where are they for their barbering work? And I went, they're on Instagram. And he was like, hang on. He just couldn't get his head around it. And I said, right, we're all on Instagram. So what we do as barbershop owners is we get this huge following of barbers. And then if it snows and we're shut for the day, we post on our Instagram, we're shut today, thinking our customers are going to see it. Mm. But actually, barbers from all over the world see it. And then our customers turn up to the door and they're like, why are you shut? And we're like, well, we posted on Instagram. And they're like, well, I don't care.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. But that's.
But customers.
That's, it's true. That's it's absolutely bang customers on the nail.
Yeah. When a customer's going to get their haircut, they don't think to go and check on Instagram in case there's been an update. Because they don't think we're on Instagram. They use it for their social stuff.
Yeah.
We use it for our professional stuff and think our customers know that we're all on it from a professional sense. And of course, there's this misalignment, right? So he couldn't believe it. So I said, there's no professional platform for barbering. And it's just one of the best industries in the world where if barbers could all come together, there is so much value to be had in so many ways, from training to recruitment to wages, you know, because now you can track where you've been. And actually, you know, as a barber, if they saw that I'd worked for this shop, that shop, this shop, and other barbers are kind of endorsing my work, saying, oh, you know, skin fade, amazing. I'll give you an endorsement for that, like what they do on Instagram. On LinkedIn. Well, if I now come to your shop and I've got this rating behind me that's been like been created inside of Buzz, when customers then come and look at all the shops in the area and they see there's this amazing barber in your shop and I can be that guy because I've got the rating in my Buzz profile, well, maybe I can demand a bit more money. And I can say to you, look, if I come and work at your shop, I've got a X rating. So when customers try and find a good barber and they look at your shop and they see that your average rating across your team is higher than everyone else's, well, they're going to come to your shop. So now I've actually got some weight that I can carry with me around my career, which at the moment on Instagram, we will post and post and post.
So that turns your 2,000 followers into some sort of money. Yeah.
Well, absolutely. Yeah. And within Buzz, there's so many things. And the reason, I mean, look, the reason there's so many things is because barbers have created it and we know what barbers would want. For example, you know, there's loads of barbers who right now have got 100,000 followers. And let's just say they wanted to do a masterclass. I know guys who, if they have a masterclass, barbers will travel from across Europe, come and watch them. And that barber who's hosting, they don't make any money out of that. They're just doing it for profile. And they're giving back, which is amazing. But they've been giving back forever.
Yeah.
What if that barber with, let's say, 100,000 followers said, I'm going to do a masterclass inside of Buzz and I'm going to charge people just to come and watch it live. And it was just one tap,
quid.
Right? Yeah. One tap, and now you can access it. Well, now the barber could do one of those a month. They could get, of their 100,000 followers, they could get 1,000 of them, 500 of them. And they make a pound. Make £500 a month all of a sudden. So, I mean, that's a crude example. But if there was a platform like Buzz where all of the decisions were made with the barbers in mind, there's so much money that can be made from within our industry. And we all benefit in so many ways.
Yeah.
And no one's done it. And that was us.
Recruitment's the big
and
one.
Our minds just went crazy, right? And that was when Buzz started. Yeah. We were like, we need to do it, right?
Well, it's just evolved into so many things.
And then as a barber shop, presumably you can be getting rating yourself, so you're attracting.
So, well, right? This is way down the line. But yes, I mean, as a barber shop, right now, again,
kind
another example
employer,
of how it's broken,
the
right?
good boss kind of...
Well, a customer will go to Google and they will look at the rating of the barber shop. Now, the rating of the barbershop was created by the team that was there probably a year ago.
Yeah.
So those guys have all left. You've now got a bunch of clowns in there. I go because it's a 4.8 rated barbershop and I get a shit haircut. And as a customer, I'm like, well, this was a 4.8 rate. And it's like, right, but they've rated the establishment, not the team.
Yeah.
So within Buzz, well, let's say the barbers get rated themselves and they can be rated on a number of things, not only just the haircut, but also, you know, how they made you feel. So there's different types of ratings. Mm. I mean, the customer could also rate the establishment as well. So the ratings get split, one for the establishment and one for the barber. But then when the barber leaves the shop and they unlink themselves, the rating travels with the barber. So now if I come and work for you, you benefit from my rating. Now as a customer, when he's looking at your shop, he gets a true reflection of what
this
the shop's
is why
there.
Michelin give it to a, and, give their stars to a chef, not to
a
restaurant.
And now as a customer, you can look for someone based on the overall establishment. So what's the average rating of the team? Or I could, let's say I want a beard trim and I want somebody that's amazing at beards. I go and find a guy with a great rating with lots of beard endorsements. And I know I'm going to find the guy. Having never been in there, I see Pete through Buzz. So I now see where he works, head to the shop, ask for Pete, having never seen the guy before. Because I know he's got amazing ratings and a ton load of endorsements. And so everyone kind of wins out of it.
And let's say, you're a customer. Again, it's not there yet, but it's all in the works. I cut your hair in this shop. The app knows that. And let's say you moved to New York. You'd be able to find in the app the American version of me and the American version of my shop. And it's no longer a big gamble on where you go and get your haircut. And that's what a lot of people say when they move to a new place.
Yeah.
Where do I go for a haircut? Now we've taken care of that.
And we've spoken to so many people from training and education a lot of the publications, and they'll say, so could you do this with it? And it's like, sure,
do anything
we could do that. We spoke to a really well-known training establishment, right? And they said, could there be a training facility in there? And we were like, one of the biggest problems in training in the industry is they get their MVQ, whatever, and then they message the barbershop owners and they're like, oh, can I come in and watch? And a lot of barbershop owners are like, look, we're too busy. We can't do that.
Mm.
So there's this gap of learning where guys come out of college and then try and get into somewhere. So we were like, well, what if you come up with like a mentor program where barbers could register themselves and say, well, look, I would love to do more because I'm just a barber. I'm just going in, doing my work.
Yeah.
I love it. And then I go home. But it'd be great if I could register myself as a mentor. Kids that come out of college, there's an affiliation because we know the guys who run these big training things, right? The kids come out of college, They go and look for a local mentor. They find Ollie, who's a barber. And then they just message him within Buzz and say, like, I've just come out of college. Can I come and mentor you? And he's a registered mentor. He's like, yeah, you come down. My barbershop owner's too busy. But I'm not too busy. So now the kids from college can come and stand next to a barber because they've volunteered themselves. Yeah. And it would be a time-bound agreement. It would be a three-month agreement. And at the end of that, there's then a relationship where that person can forever on use Ollie and say, oh, you know, what do you think of my work? Like, have you got any tips?
This is what But where is it? Where is it at the moment? So this was a conversation in a coffee shop.
Yeah, right.
So well, that's a big evolution of that. That's happened over the years.
Of course, but the beginning was kind of a baby version of
this. So we created like a minimum viable product, which was clunky as fuck. But we got it up because no one was interested to back us, right? And we were like, let's just get something going. So we just pulled everything together.
It got huge traction, though, to begin with. I mean,
brilliant.
Phenomenal.
Brilliant. We had 2,000 signups in 6 weeks. And then we shut it off.
Yeah, 300 shops from everywhere. We'd go on every day, wouldn't we? And we'd refresh it. And see new pins coming in like America. And
was that a combination of this is brilliant and oh shit?
Shit, because it's not working. Yeah, nothing
so,
works.
So the clunky one's gone.
And clunky you've been, one's gone.
Have you still got the same techie guy or have you got a new firm doing all of
this? No, well, you know, it was just a temporary deal with the guy. He was just a friend of ours.
So this is polished now and...
Yep. So we've now got a refined version. We haven't officially launched. We've just gone with the same team and just said, look, just push it out in conversations because what we've learned is if you don't have a community... When the wave of people join, there's no one there for them to join. So we're now just building the users again. We're approaching 1,000 users at the moment and there's nothing going on. We're not pushing anything, but that's intent.
Okay. You got a time scale? You think
we would like it to be this year. We're talking to a couple of guys about investment. We're talking about going to a couple of the expos. We were talking about that on the way up. We're messaging a few guys. And the aim is to get the right time to try and bring... You know, as many people together as possible.
Well, mate, I hope. So, I mean, if it's,
it would benefit the industry just, so much.
Just sounds like the sort of thing. I mean, I've been doing 20 odd of these and constantly, and you've kind of capped all of every conversation. Struggling with training, struggling with start. You know,
The recruitment thing's a big thing.
The list is amazing.
The recruitment thing, you know, every recruitment website that we've used in the past is dead in the water. You know, by the time you need someone, there's no one on there. No one's paying any money. No one's keeping the website up to date because they're not earning any money. And it just, it's impossible. You know, you stick an ad on Instagram or Facebook or in the window and you hope for the best. You know, with Buzz, this was live now. You know, you can, you know, create a recruitment campaign and it will send out to everybody within a, what is it?
25 mile radius
around you that they'll get a notification up to say, I'm looking for a barber. And the other way around.
Yeah, and that's live now, that actually. Yeah. We wanted to get that up just so it was ready for when.
Yeah. Right. So anybody that's on there that owns a barbershop, if they're looking for somebody, they can set up a recruitment campaign. There's three or four different types of campaign you can do from a day to a month, you know, and the notifications that go out accordingly. And it could be find me a barber and it will go out. And then the next thing we're going to make it so you can pick the things that you want from the barbers. You'll be able to actually pin down. You want someone with 10 years experience or these amount of endorsements or
I need someone whatever. Good with scissors. And
Right.
Yeah. But then the other side of the coin, you've got the barbers. So the barbers can say, I'm willing to travel 50 miles or I'm willing to travel 5. And if they
match.com.
Right?
I love it. It's exactly it. You end up, you're getting rid of wasting barbers' times who have schlepped across London to come and meet you. And they're like, oh no, this isn't any good for me. You know, exactly.
The subscription model for the training and all that, you know, earning money from it is, you know, like OnlyFans, you can go and get a subscription and you can go and do your thing. And then the recruitment side is a bit like that.
You're going to get barbers taking their clothes off on the last thing now, right? It's like... We don't
I think that
endorse.
Could shut it down. No,
that's the thing. Make it go really
Let's
good.
Just raise
so,
this back
and, again. And so that's the. I mean, how are you monetizing it? What does it cost? How's it? How do I? What? Who's?
Nothing
who's
yet.
It
well,
costing?
This is the thing.
Look, when you get the balls rolling in all the different sort of areas, monetizing it is.
But initially, it's not. It's free to use.
Everything's free.
If you want to run a campaign,
free.
Yeah. If you want to run a campaign, that's got a cost because it's gonna, you know, it's got notifications going out and the app's doing some work. But apart from that, you just post away. And like, rather than like Instagram, where you have your stories and you can like post whatever you're doing, our version has what's going on in each country, so it knows where the barber is from. So you can see what's trending in England or America or India or Australia. Where barbers are posting from, it goes up, so you can touch the flag. And it will show you what's going on in that country. Or you can go back to the global thing and it will show you what's going on in the world again. Mm. But rather than tag friends or brands, you'll be tagging your skills and the products that you've used so that we'll be able to get a global overview on, you know, everything that's going on across the industry, like live. And your endorsements then are going to be linked to the work that you've done. If you've done skin fade, you put clipper work, or if it's a kid's haircut, you put kids' cuts, or scissor work, texturing, whatever it is, you add it on. And then when people can like the endorsement that you've linked, and that builds into your CV in the back end, so that when you go for a job, you can send a CVS file of your CV over to the employer. But yeah, barbers can now say, I'm looking for work, and it will send out a notification to every shop within their radius of travel. You know, this is the way to deal with the recruitment.
It needs to be live.
Problem.
It needs to be run live. Because it happens so quick.
Yeah. You know,
like in the corporate world, if you're looking for a job on the first of the month, you're probably still looking on the 30th of the month. Whereas in barbering, I could say to you, oh, there was a fellow actually I was talking to wanted a job. He's a barber.
Yeah.
And if you said, when was that? If I said, oh, it was last Monday, he's probably in a job by now.
Yeah, yeah.
So it goes so quick. You need barbers and barbershops to run it themselves. And I think having everyone in one place,
love it,
dedicated to barbers, run by barbers, because everyone involved with barbers. And you can have it now that, you know, the monetizing thing, money is only made when everyone benefits from it.
Yeah.
So it's a case of, if you want to run a campaign, we'll just work with you on the campaign and it'll be as big or as small as you want. And that's how then the money's made. But there's no surprises. There's not ever going to be any, now we've got you, now we're going to charge you, you know.
And
And we're bringing in brands like Barber Blades at the moment. For all Buzz users, give 10% off. So, you know, we're bringing in more of these. I want insurances in there and all these other things that if you're a Buzz user, you know, the codes will change.
Benefits.
You'll keep you in there. And, you know, you'll just be being part of the community, you'll be able to save yourself some money. That's where we're going with it.
So,
guys, I'm so glad you guys came up and made
it.
It's been really lovely chatting to you. So we've covered franchise thoroughly. Really love talking to you guys about passion, still having a passion. The switch when we went on to Buzz, your energy levels of enthusiasm.
Oh, I love it.
It's fantastic. It's great that you found this kind of another passion.
That's where we go.
That's what's really exciting.
That's the fun thing.
That's what our industry is meant to be about, is the energy.
We call it pro media. Buzz is pro media. You've got Instagram as social media. And I think in the future, industries will be broken down into a different form of media. You know, you won't use Instagram for work. You'll use it for you. And you'll use your pro media platform for your pro media. And the two will link together, but it will split the user to where it needs to be. You know, I don't want customers following my personal one. I want my customers following my professional one. And, you know, they don't need to see pictures of my kids. They want to see pictures of my work.
Yeah.
You know, and you can...
I want to see our industry realize how valuable it is when we all come together rather than being so fragmented. And at the moment, we're piggybacking Instagram, which we were talking about. It's just an advertising platform.
Doesn't work.
Every other post.
Oh, I was going through mine today, and every three posts I've got two sponsored ads. I'm like, what the fuck? This is mine. Get off my.
Well, I must be. You're saying, obviously, with us, with the Noble Barber, our interest is fantastically followed by barbers.
Yeah, it's great.
And that's
probably one of the very few Instagram accounts that actually has that real direction. It's much appreciated.
You've got to get a buzz.
I'll tell you I'll give you a good example. a really quick good example of how it works in a dedicated platform. When all the barbers in one place, we see barbers messaging each other. And it's really well received. The barber messages another barber in Buzz, the response is really nice and it's really warm. But when you message another barber on Instagram, it's kind of creepy.
Yeah.
And we were trying to think why that is, right? Why when you message a random barber on Instagram, do you not get a response? And it's like a big bar. And I was like, imagine you're like a podcaster and we walked into a massive bar in London. And I was like, oh, I see that fella over there. He's a podcaster. You should go and say, all right. You went over to him and went, I'm a podcaster. He'd be like, you doing?
See you later.
I don't give a shit who you are.
I'm not working.
Yeah. Right? It'd be weird. Whereas if you went to a podcaster's convention, you'd be able to go over to fellow podcasters and just strike up conversations because everyone's there for the same reason.
Yeah.
And I think that's why we've seen such positivity and warmth inside Buzz, is because when it's a dedicated platform and we all come together and realize how good we are, how much weight we have, how much leverage.
Well, I mean, every conversation I've had, like I say, it's a great community out there.
Yeah.
Everyone is looking for the same kind of answers. We've all got the same sort of questions.
Yeah.
Mate, I look forward to using it. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot. Thank you for watching this episode of The Noble Barber. If you liked it, please do like and subscribe.
If you've got comments of what we should be doing in future, please give us your questions and we'll try and find an expert to talk to. Or if you're the expert and you want to come on here and help, stay in touch, we'll get you on. Come and join us on the sofa.